welcome Jet Streamers to your review and preview podcast, as the Jerks have just come off a 2-1 loss to Melbourne Victory and this Saturday afternoon are heading to Jubilee Oval to take on reigning premiers Sydney FC. My name is Mitch, and due to overwhelmingly popular demand from you will never find out who, probably myself, I'm making my return to the podcast far quicker than usual, and for a bit of a change, I'm actually hosting tonight. So I don't promise it's going to be perfect, but I hope it's going to be fun. So now that I'm Batman, I've got my two sidekicks known as Robin 1 and Robin 2. We've got Dave. How are you?
Hello, Mitch.
Did you have fun?
Hello, Mitch. How are you?
I'm good. And Robin number 2, I've got Matt. How are you going, Matt?
Mate, I'm good. I'm not too crash hot on that intro, but yeah, I was going good.
I'm loving all the spam accounts that you've created to warrant this so-called public push to have you behind the microphone as a host.
Look, we're talking about it and you're picturing it, so it happened, right?
All right, come on, Bruce Wayne.
All right, so with that banger of an intro out of the way, we've got our opening question, because I'm a good host and do opening questions to start off with. So thank you to Plaguesy on the forum for giving us this this opening question. The question, I'll give it to you first, Matt, is what's the movie ending that surprised you the most?
Well, I know what Ferns would say. He'd be Empire Strikes Back all the way.
Yep.
For me, this was contentious because there were quite a few that I thought of straight away. But I'm going to go with 12 Monkeys, only because of the whole flashbacks that Bruce Willis keeps having through the movie of the guy getting shot in the airport with the long red hair and the mustache, and then you find out it was him. So, yeah, it was a cool movie.
Good Bruce Willis drop as well. That's terrific. Oh, and I forgot to give a spoiler alert for anyone listening. I mean, most of these movies we'll talk about, you should have, I guess, found out the spoilers by now, but you never know. Dave, what have you got? Have you got a Bruce Willis movie or you got something else?
No, I've got something else. Seven. Seven is for me probably one of the ones that surprised me the most with the ending. Yeah, really, really didn't expect what was in the box at the end. I'm not going to give any spoilers for those who haven't seen it. If you haven't seen it by now, I mean, you know, I can't really help you, but the
well, you mean, the box, you mean the head?
Well, yeah, the head. Yeah, the head. The head was in the box. I didn't see that coming.
And also, what's his name? John Doe actually, like, filling out the seven sins. What a great movie.
Yeah, it was a very good movie.
Every time my wife and I have a box of any description, one of us always goes, "What's in the box?" Every single time. I love it.
That was a good impersonation.
Well, I had two that came to mind. One of them has Brad Pitt in it as well, so that links to your seven one. I liked Fight Club. I didn't see that coming at all, and I don't know. Once you see it, you can't unsee it. But the ending in Fight Club just absolutely blew me away, and I just didn't picture it at all. And it's just so absurd. I love that. And then the other movie that really surprised me with the ending was the Hugh Jackman magician movie, The Prestige, with what's his name in it, Christian Bale.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys seen that?
Yes, but yeah, I don't remember the ending.
It's really cool. It's worth a watch again too. Yeah, you say it, Matt.
Is that the one with the clones?
Yeah, yep.
That's enough.
Yeah, that's enough. And also, yeah, no, that's good. So, yeah, they're our surprise movie ending. So if you have any...
Notable mention's got to be Usual Suspects as well and The Departed. I've watched them both again in the last couple of weeks, and they're right up there.
Nice. We could nearly have a podcast just on this, really, couldn't we?
It's probably more entertaining than the Jets.
Well, on that note, we will start to look at the Jets, as I like to call them. So because tonight's a review and a preview, and because I'm in charge of the microphone and I can do whatever the hell I want, I'm going to set it up slightly differently to normal. So I'm going to look at basically the vibe that's in the team at the moment and basically just look at the individual players or coaches and just try and put a point on what is going wrong and what is going right. So have a look at how they're going and have a look at what we plan to do with them in the future. But just kind of look at them individually rather than a team effort, because we've basically got the sum of our parts from last year. It's a very similar team, but something's definitely not going right. So are you guys keen to join in on this expedition of unknown?
Nope. It's been nice having you as the host, Mitch. I'll see you later.
All right. And Dave just cut out. I'm sorry, guys. We'll catch up with him later. Well, so I'll just give a few little stats on the Victory game. I'll give a little brief thing on the Sydney game, and then we'll just knock into the players. So from the Victory game we played on the weekend, which was yay many days ago and felt like forever ago, the possession was basically 50-50. The passing was even. We had 25 crosses to Victory's 14, so nearly double the amount of crosses. We had 18 shots to Victory's 11, but only four of our shots were on target as opposed to three of Victory's. Both teams had six fouls. Victory had two yellows and we had one yellow. So pretty even stats. We had a lot more shots, but they didn't really mean much. And then if we just quickly look at where we're heading into with Sydney, Sydney have won all of their last five or six games except one away loss to league leaders Perth. And Perth are just whipping everyone at the moment. So Sydney are in really good form. They're sitting third on 26 points and we're on seventh on 12 points. And on paper, yeah, Sydney, they're looking good. So what I want us to do is I want us to just look at the individuals, briefly go over the Victory game, and then look at what we do in the next four coming weeks with them. So what we usually do when we look at players is we start at the back and we work our way forward, but I'm going to try our best mailman impersonation and start at the front and then work our way to the back, if that's okay. So we'll start with Roy O'Donovan. I like that little laugh, whoever that was. That was good.
I don't think it matters if it's okay. You've got the microphone. So,
Roy O'Donovan, in the Victory game, the highlights I've got of him is in the 43rd minute, he got into a good position. Jair had a low cross to him, but didn't do quite enough to trouble Lawrence Thomas and co, and probably at the wrong angle to a point. Do we think he did enough in that game to really trouble Deng and Broxham, who aren't really like the starting centre-backs Victory would go in with? And do we think he is like our answer for the next few weeks, but also in the future, are we going to re-sign him? So, Matt, what do you think about Roy O'Donovan?
If we look at that, just that game individually, I would say that it was a below average for him. If we look at his last, four or five games since he's been back from injury, from suspension, since Thomas's injury, I'd say he's been good. As far as re-signing, jury's still out. But I think the problem for O'Donovan at the moment is that goals aren't coming from anywhere else. So you ignore the rest of the team, you focus on O'Donovan and don't give him time, and we're going to suffer.
What about you, Dave? What's your thoughts on Roy?
Look, in the game, the first that I saw or noticed Roy was in the second half when it was pointed out that the crowd were booing him, and I figured that was the first opportunity. They had to boo him because it's the first time he touched the ball. But three goals in five appearances since his return. I don't think we could ask for much more than that. It's a pretty good strike rate. And in this league, the common theme amongst most teams is that they can't defend. Really, like, most teams are conceding on most weeks. So, and goal scorers are also hard to find. Reliable goal scorers are hard to find. Do I think we will re-sign him? Yes, but I think that that's for want of few options. I struggle to see where we will be able to recruit someone, particularly someone overseas, because I get a sneaking suspicion that we might actually have some financial trouble. Not financial trouble, but the budgets for the upcoming season and beyond will be significantly less than we've seen in previous seasons, where we were able to go outside and look at recruiting a Ronnie Vargas, Patricia Rodriguez, Riley McGree,
Jair,
these sorts of, they are under the cap, but Ronnie is a marquee. So I think from a reliability and a proven capable goal scorer, I think that he will be in the team. I think we will re-sign him. I wonder whether there will be a slight change in Ernie Merrick's lineup or approach to the games, where we could look to actually have him up front in a two. He seems to go missing in the big games. He seems to go missing for me in the big games where he doesn't actually go looking for the ball. And up front by himself, he's deadly in that six-yard box. And that's where most of his goals have come so far this season. You look at the scrappy goal that he scored against the Roar, for example. That they haven't been what I would say clinical striker conversions. So I think we'll re-sign him. I don't know how effective he'll be. But I think that the fact he's a proven quality, we'll see him in a Jet shirt again next season.
So do you agree with Dave, Matt? Do you like the idea of a front two with Rory in it?
I love it, but how many seasons has Merrick coached for? I'm trying to quickly look that up now, but is it like 10, 11, whatever in the A-League? And he hasn't changed formation yet, so I can't see it happening.
He had Allsopp and Thompson in his first season. In his first couple of seasons, he had Archie Thompson, Danny Allsopp. He had Carlos Hernandez sitting in behind. I think that there is potential there. And with if the paper is that the Herald is correct in what they're reporting about the Jets offering Kane Shepherd a contract extension, then I think that it might be something stranger things have happened. We may look to.
I'd love it. Sorry, Dave. Yeah, I'd love it. I said it a few weeks ago. I would love nothing more than to see us play like a 4-4-2 narrow diamond, because at the moment we're getting nothing from our wide players. And sorry if we're like ruining your sheet image. But I'd love to see a 4-4-2 narrow diamond and have like, I don't know, Vargas and Stevie UG playing left and right, but tucking in. And then having George and Hoffman as the two wingbacks, and then you have Kerner when we've got the ball that sort of drops back into a more defensive role. I think it'd be brilliant, because that'd put Dimmy as number 10, and the three players that we can actually rely on to score, I think, are Dimmy, Shepherd, and O'Donovan.
And I think that a player that we're probably missing here that Mitch may or may not come on to, though, is Joey Champness. How do we see that? Does Dimmy play? Do we play a four across the mid, Bogarkovic, Kanter, Joey Champness, and Dimi Petratos? Don't know. Anyway.
It's a good question. Like, Champness, everyone's super optimistic about when he comes back, like arguably too excited for him. Like, he is obviously a really good player, a really good, young, exciting player. He's probably, I would say, he's the closest thing we have to an Andrew Naboot replacement in our squad in a sense. Like, when he comes back, he's got to feature in some way, probably start in a small fashion and then work his way up and become really important for us.
I think the reason so many people are excited is because his shot conversion ratio from last year was really, really good. Like, he was probably scoring, what, with 50% of the shots that he took. Dave will probably correct me on this, and I'll probably be way out there. It just feels like that he had a very good shots to goals ratio, and that's the one thing that we're missing this year, is that if you look at on paper, you know, we've had more possession, we've had more shots, we've had more field, you know, position, but we're not scoring goals. It's like Salah for Liverpool for the first 10 games or whatever, when he was shit in fantasy. But now he's just come good, and I think that's the reason why so many people are pinning so many hopes on Champness, is because Jets fans weren't used to seeing their team score goals. And, you know, last year it just happened, and Joey Champness was part of last year, like from his first sub appearance against the Mariners when he came on and he scored, you know, within 10 minutes. It was like, oh, geez, you know, this guy can actually shoot and the ball goes in. It doesn't go into row Z. So, yes, we're probably being overly optimistic, but by the same token, maybe that's just the little missing link that we need.
Yeah, that's a fair call. Like you were saying, the amount of shots he had and converted, like those victory stats that I bothered to actually look up before the game, like I said before, we had 18 shots in that game, but only 4 were on target. Like, we were quite wasteful with our shooting. So players like that, they're super important, like you're saying. One question I have, Dave, you mentioned a few times with O'Donovan about him being a reliable scorer. Are we allowed to use the word reliable when it comes to Roy? Like, he started missing a third of this season, and with his suspension and injury thing, he doesn't actually play a large amount of percentage of games for us. Can we call him reliable?
Absolutely. Absolutely we can, because when he is on the field, he is effective. He is scoring goals, and he is contributing to goals as well. I mean, if we look at how he has gone in his Jets history, I'm just having a quick look here. He is currently 6th most effective player in terms of goals or assists, providing a goal or assist every 115 minutes that he's on the field. He is scoring at a rate of a goal every 135 minutes that he's playing. So that's a goal every 1.67 games. And we're seeing that at the moment. That's what he's scoring at. He scored 3 and 5. So yes, he's reliable. It's whether he can curb his enthusiasm, his aggression, and whether the referees also potentially give him a break, depends on how successful a season he will have in regards to appearances.
Hopefully he'll get a little bit tamer as he gets a year older and we see him on the park for many more minutes in a row.
Yeah, well possibly.
Hopefully. Oh, yeah, maybe. Well, we're talking about strikers and whatnot. We kind of brought up Kane Shepherd, so I'll just talk about him for a minute. In the victory game, he was subbed on in the 77th minute for Jair, and then a minute later, he scored the goal. He got a rebound off Matt Redenton's shot. He did his best Tim Cahill impersonation and manhandled Deng really well. And his initial shot basically asked a lot of questions of Lawrence Thomas, and then he neatly followed up the finish. How much more can we ask of Kane Shepherd before he's given a start? Or is his place perfectly on the bench as a super sub a la Milton Rodriguez go back 10 or 11 years? We've said it will re-sign him soon, but Dave, where do you see Shepherd? Does he get his start soon? What do we do with the guy?
By all accounts, what is holding Kane Shepherd back from earning a start or at least getting on the pitch with an extended period of time is his fitness. He's just come out of the Victorian National Premier League, so that semi-professional level into what is now a fully professional level, players need to adjust, they need to make that jump. We saw in the past how some players can't do that. Andy Brennan is the perfect example. So I think we have learned from that in the past when we're managing Kane's game time, because he has actually made 10 appearances for the club so far this season. He's provided, he scored 2 goals, provided 2 assists. He's doing really well. I really can't be asking much more than what he's producing as a player that we expected to maybe get a couple of appearances. He's been involved in all but 3 games. So I think his start to his Jets career has been exceptional. And a year extension is something that is definitely warranted, actually.
Yeah, nice. What about you, Matt? Like, do you think it's worth the gamble to start the guy, particularly with the quality we're able to put on the bench around him at the moment?
Definitely, especially if we can get him into a more central role. Going back to what Dave said, I actually picked Shepherd to be our golden boot at the start of the year, and I thought he was a good shot just from what I'd seen in preseason and whatnot. And I think the difference between him and Andy Brennan was that Brennan struggled with the pace of the game. Shepherd doesn't. Shepherd sort of has got his own unique talents as far as he can hold up the ball. He can turn a defender. He doesn't look out of place. Where he does look out of place, in my opinion anyway, is when he gets played wide, like the second game against Brisbane when he got brought on, and they were sort of playing him. I can't remember. I think it was they brought him on the left flank. He probably doesn't have the pace to be a winger, but he's great in the middle, and I'd love to see him and Roy sort of just sitting in the middle of the park, maybe with a different formation. He had a soft tissue injury, if I'm remembering correctly, that kept him out for 3 weeks. He might have been a calf or something.
Plantar fascia. Is it plantar fascia?
Fasciitis. Or something. Yeah. Where's Dr. Emma when we need her?
You'll need to decipher that for me, but whatever it was, I mean, the guy's 26, so after I know he's coming out of semi-professional, but as a semi-professional going into a professional at 26, after this long, he should be fit, except for the injury side of things, which I guess we don't really know exactly what's happened there. The only guy that's not going to be fit after a full preseason is, and you know, at 26, is probably Tom Rogic, because he still struggles. But the idea, like, I think that he is an out and out sort of traditional centre forward, and I think that if we play him in the middle, he's going to cause teams a lot of problems. So yeah, I really hope we re-sign him, and I hope he gets a go from the start, playing right in the middle, and I hope Roy is there to, you know, chase the centre backs around and harry them and tire them out, and I hope Shepherd's there to sort of hold the ball up and be able to dish it off to whoever we've got playing wide or back to Dimmy. And yeah, I think it'll be a completely different sort of style for the Jets, but maybe it's what we need.
Yeah, nice. Well, he's giving Merrick a headache at the moment. Surely Merrick's just thinking, how am I going to get this guy in the team? So we'll see if anything comes of that. And I fully agree that Tom Rogic is wafer thin, even though I really love him. He's just, yeah, he's frustrating. Anyway, not talking about Socceroos right now. Next up.
Talking about Celtic.
Oh, right. I'll talk about both. So we've got Dimi Petratos. So Dimi got his spot back in the number 10 position in the centre on the weekend against the Victory. I was a lot more optimistic about what he'd do there than I guess the paper showed what he did. His highlights from Victory is he, in the 56th minute, he put in a decent enough cross into the box. It got cleared by a defender, but then it landed for Daniel Georgescu, who had a pretty neat shot that just got tipped over. He seems to have basically just been given the number 10 spot because Ronnie was out. I thought in that game he found a lot more time and space on the ball than he'd found all year on the right. I think he's been kind of really suffocated on the right, and I thought he was very free in the middle. But I'm hearing and reading a lot of criticism that he's taking too many touches, he's not offloading the ball quick enough. What do you guys think? Is Dimi going good, or is he lacking something at the moment? What do you think, Dave?
I think Dimi's lacking he's not lacking a goal. He's not lacking in his contribution through assists either. He is leading our team in that metric. Perception and what our eyes see are a funny thing. I think that if we were performing better as an overall unit, then the criticism of Dimi would not be there, or certainly not as vocal as what we're experiencing. Dimi, for me, is doing fine. He is. I think he feels a lot of pressure on himself that he has to perform. He's got a Socceroos place that he has lost. He's coming off the back of his most successful season, arguably. He is, but it's just not clicking for him. Well, those around him just don't seem to be on the same wavelength. So I think it has been a tough start this season for Petratos. I think that he is performing well. I also think that there is room for him to improve, but he signed a new contract, so we expect that he'll be around. I do think that he will look to go overseas at some point in time, but I kind of get the sense that Dimi will be our number 10 for future seasons.
What do you think, Matt? I definitely vibe similar to what Dave's saying. I just don't think people are running around him and creating enough options. How do you perceive Dimi this year, particularly compared to last year?
I still think we're trying to use Dimi too much like we used Naboo last year. We were a lot more direct last year than what we are this year, and I think Dimi's trying hard. If not, he's probably trying too hard, but he's, the start of the year you could see he was just looking for that quick ball, and Jair just wasn't sort of getting into the same positions that Naboot was. Hoffman wasn't getting into the same positions O'Donovan was, and it sort of slowed everything down. And then I think that a lot of the attack seemed to be directed through Dimi. And, you know, I agree at times he's sort of taken too many touches, but he probably hasn't had the options in front of him that he's needed to make that quick decision and play the quick ball like we did last year.
So I guess moving forward, Matt, if we've got Vargas coming back from his 1 week suspension, are we leaving Dimi in the centre to give him more opportunity there, or do we put Vargas back at the 10 and move Dimi back out to the right? Where do you see this heading?
In my head and in an ideal world, I think that you have to play the players that are most likely to score closest to the goal. So I'd like to see Dimi stay at number 10. And if that means Vargas gets pushed out wide or gets pushed a little deeper, then so be it. I think that Vargas can sort of receive the ball, turn a player, you know, pull the strings and, you know, pick a pass. Dimi out on the wing just doesn't seem to be working for me at the moment. He doesn't have the pace of Naboot, so the whole, you know, balls over the top or balls in between behind, he can't run onto. He's the type of player that, you know, needs balls to feet, and he's technically very good, and he can spray a pass. And he's also got that shot on him, so I think we need to get him closer to goal.
What do you think, Dave, about Ronnie? Like, I'm vibing that the general vibe is he's lost a bit of the shine to the Rolls Royce. Like, I think people are calling for him to be re-signed a little less frequently at the moment. Do you think he's the number 10, we have to re-sign, we keep him forever, or have you lost a bit of faith in him?
I've not lost any faith in him. I think that he's still a player that can turn a game for us, though he's cutting a quite forlorn and frustrated figure during the previous matches that we saw him. I think that the club will be in discussions with him. They'll be sounding him out, but for me, they'll actually be looking to take their time and make a solid assessment because of the wage that he's on. And for me, that is the... I think if we re-sign him, it will be a post-season or a very late-season signing. Though it wouldn't surprise me if the new club that is entering the competition next year also wouldn't be sounding him out at the same time.
Can I ask a quick question to the two of you? Sorry, yeah. Sorry, Mitch, but... Okay, if you could only re-sign one, who would it be, O'Donovan or Vargas?
I would re-sign O'Donovan because he's under the cap and I think we could get better value for money with a marquee elsewhere, to be honest. What about you, Dave?
I would also re-sign O'Donovan. I think that we have a capable replacement in Dimi Petratos, though a different type of player. And I think Dimi's move into the centre would... allow for us to recruit pace out wide, and I think that the pace is the thing that is missing from the team this year.
What about you, Matt? Was that a loaded question?
No, I agree with both of it. Like, as much as I love seeing Vargas, I just, you know, we touched on it earlier about, you know, possible financial troubles, and I don't think that he's probably, I don't think he's done enough to. Like, our problem at the moment is scoring goals, and you know, I don't think he's done enough to sort of necessarily justify a marquee position.
Yeah, okay. No, that's fair. Well, moving on and talking about someone that's potentially not done enough, let's talk about our Brazilian import, Jair. I know Dave is super frustrated with this guy, or at least said that on the weekend at one point. His highlights and lowlights from the victory game, he had that little low cross to Roy we talked about earlier that, like, was pretty neat work to take on to Storm Roo in the victory box. But then in the 65th minute, he absolutely flapped a golden opportunity set up by Stevie Yagarkovich. What do you think, Dave? How did you see him in victory? I think you were quite frustrated. And where do you see him heading for the rest of the season?
I see him heading back overseas. At some point, I don't think that we will get mutual with him. I think we will see out the season and persevere with him simply because we can't afford to cut him. I've been frustrated with Jair. I was willing to give him an opportunity, and he so far has let me down. He's certainly not the fleet-footed winger that I think, and probably the coaching staff had hoped that we were signing as well. I'd be interested to see how he plays a little bit more centrally, even up with Roy. But Jair, for me, the biggest disappointment is not just the on-field stuff, but the fact that he isn't lasting 90 minutes yet. You want all of your players to be on the field and looking to be capable of making the 90 minutes. And he's failed to do that in every game that he's played. That That's at least one change that you know you're going to have to be making. It's one place on the bench that you know you've got to account for. And that reduces, with a five-player bench, the options that you've got. So for me, I don't see this being as a successful recruit, more in the misses than the hits.
And I fully agree. Like, you're allowed to have those players, like one or two players that you know won't last the 90 at times, provided that they genuinely bring that X factor and they genuinely bring that they're going to change a game for us at some point. But he's not proving that to me in any way enough to validate that. What do you think about him, Matt?
Definitely doesn't have the pace that Naboo did, and just definitely isn't as technical as what Potato was. The guy's probably had more air swings in the last six games than what I would in a round of golf, which is probably saying something. He's a miss. Like, I think Griff and Laurie have had pretty good recruiting, but he's got to go down as a failure.
Well, do we try and reshuffle and just avoid using him in future? Like, I guess the other people we have to use in these spots, we've got, you know, Kane Shepherd to a point we've talked about already. Jason Hoffman is in and around that kind of area. And even, I guess, Mitch Austin, which we may or may not ever see as a senior player. Like, do we ditch the Jair experiment completely, or do we think Merrick will persist? What do you think, Matt?
I think it'll come down to formation. I think if we keep seeing the sort of three up front with two wide, that Jair will sort of stay in the mix. I think if we sort of go to playing two up front, that he's probably going to start to have, you know, more and more sort of limited opportunities. It'll come down to how we want to play, whether we're going to keep developing this sort of system and style of play that we have this year, which is, you know, more possession, or whether we're going to keep trying to foster what we were doing last year, which was, you know, the more sort of out and out and direct attack.
Yeah, that's fair. Thinking about Jason Hoffman, he's basically our utility man. We just use him pretty much everywhere except goalkeeper, and maybe even after the weekend we might even chuck him in goalkeeper. But what do you think about Hoffman, Dave? Where's his best position?
I actually think his best position is at right fullback. I think he has the ability to provide the outlet that Ernie Merrick expects from his team. He expects a lot from our fullbacks, and we're seeing that through Daniel Georgevski, who's performing very well so far. Hoff's not been too bad, though, when he plays at right wing. He is a good player to have in the squad because of the limited squad spaces that we can have, that he can actually provide versatility off the bench in a number of positions.
Yeah, that's fair. What about you, Matt? What do you think about the Hoff? Where should we put him?
Right back. 100% yep. Right back. Him and Georgevski just provide so much more going forwards than any other combination that we've got. They've got the athleticism to keep getting up and back, and it provides, you know, a handful for the opposition defence just with that constant sort of overlap and overload.
Yeah, okay. So if we're putting him right back, are we putting Johnny Katrumbas on the bench? I mean, the guy's, he's actually quite impressed me. He's had some lapses. Like, I thought he lapsed in the, was it the Brisbane game with the back post header? I noticed in the victory game, Katrumbas, he lost King Kenny in the box, and there was a header that he just put wide. But today we got news that he's re-signed for a couple of years. Like, are you happy to drop Katrumbas for Hoff, Matt?
At this stage, yes. And I'm not saying that Katrumbas is a great player, and the Brisbane game was all fatigue. You could see he was absolutely struggling for, you know, the last 15 minutes. But if it came down to it, and and there was one position and two players, and that was Katrumbas and Hoffman, to play right back, I'd pick Hoffman.
Are you the same, Dave?
No, I remember centre back Johnny Katrumbas, and I remember centre mid Johnny Katrumbas, and I like centre mid and centre back Johnny Katrumbas. So I'd be looking to make a bit of a change there.
Well, that's a different question, though. Like, as far as, you know,
am I dropping Hoff?
No, go for it. Like, so who's the exact centre mid you would replace Katrumbas for, Dave?
The injured Ben Kantorovsky at the moment, mate.
So at the moment, we have Steve Yagakovich in the middle, and we have an injured Ben Kenarovsky.
Yeah, we do. And I'd be looking to... Actually, I'd be putting Hoffy where Jair is, mate, and I'd be keeping Johnny Contrippins in the team at this point in time.
Personally. So you'd keep Redenton in the team then too?
No, I'd actually play Cowburn.
Interesting.
I called on the forum during the week. I'd play Cowburn there.
I've been wondering how long until Cowburn gets his spot back, whether it's centre mid, right back, centre back. I think the centre mid, like, partnering Canner or Yagakovich seems to be the answer. Well, Matt, what's your thoughts on Redenton? Do you put the goal on the weekend down to him, and how do you vibe him in general?
Garbage. Said it plenty of times. Sorry, I hate being so negative about players, especially when they've only started playing for us, but I don't get it. He's come in to replace Wayne Brown. Wayne Brown just at least offered a bit of passion. They're probably both on par for skill level. The last goal, while you can't say it's 100% Redenton's fault, it was his heavy touch after we'd cleared the ball from the 18 that gave the ball back to Victory. And I can't remember who it went to, but they played it to Truisi, who scored. But he's not tidy enough to play in the middle of the park. Well, that's in my opinion anyway. Babel said it about Bonavasia at the start of the year, and Redenton just hasn't impressed me. I just don't think he's sort of, he hasn't increased the standard of the team. So if it came back to what Dave was saying about, you know, where do you play Katrimbus? Do you play in centre back or do you play in centre mid? You know, yeah, definite options. But and what I said was, if the decision was there was two players in one position you had to pick, and that was right back, I'd pick Hoffman over Katrumbas. But yeah, I think that Katrumbas is definitely a shout to fill one of those other two spots.
Yeah, okay. I think Redenton has a bit of passion. I think he has a bit of go in him. I don't think he's technically good enough. I think, like you're saying, he's not as technically good as Wayne Brown. I don't usually get into the whole waste of a visa spot debate, but this dude's a waste of a visa spot. I just don't vibe it at all. The one thing I vibed on the weekend was we had a lot of promising attacks, and Redenton was making a lot of great runs and into good spots, and Dimi was offloading to him. But every time Redenton got the ball, it was like we just deflated and everything went backwards, and he just showed no drive to make something go forward. The one time that he did try to make something go forward on the weekend, we actually scored off. Like, he just had this stupid pot shot in trouble.
And I thought you were going to say the one thing that he tried to do go forward, he overhit the touch and landed to James Truisi.
Okay, so he did two things go forward.
But, sorry.
Dave, this is a serious podcast and you've just ruined it, honestly. He had this random pot shot. It's deflected off three dudes, and Shepherd's just done well to score off it. Like, Dave, do you think he's just lacking a bit of confidence and he'll get there, or do you think he's a complete miss and fail altogether?
I don't think he's a complete miss and fail altogether. I actually think he's a bit physically weak. The position that Ernie Merrick had him taking up was more in the what I would call in this team the Steven Nagarkovich role, which is the more advanced of the two holding midfielders and the one that looks to carry the ball forward to link with those front four. He then put Stevie UG into what I call the counter role, which is the holding or the more defensive screening role of those two midfielders. And it's like putting square pegs in round holes. I don't think Redenton's got the physicality to do what Canter does, which is why Yagakovich goes there. But he's not as good as Yagakovich doing what Yagakovich does. So it's a double negative, which is why I come back to my call. We should look to put Cowburn in there and free Yagakovich up so that Yagakovich can do what he does. Do I think he'll cut it? I think he will. I think he will find his spot. It's his first venture outside of the Knicks. So he's come to the Jets. He's under a coach that knows him and that believes in him because he gave him his start at the Knicks. And I think that there's a lot to be said about that. So
and look how the Knicks are going since he's left.
Ooh. Ooh. Who, the coach? Wow. The coach of Redenton.
Oh, look, hey, Redenton was there to the end of last season.
Mm. So, anyway, I think it's a bit early to write him off yet. There are promising signs. I mean, the game that he played against the Gold Coast, on the Gold Coast, and the game that he played against City, I thought he was terrific in the FFA Cup early seasons. So there's something there. I think it's just because it's not, the pressure's probably starting to build on him. He's starting to doubt himself, and it's probably playing in his mind that he's overplaying. So, maybe if we ease off him, we might actually see a different side to Matt Redenton.
So yeah, maybe we should just not have as high expectations, and it won't disappoint as much.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, it's definitely vibe with mate,
you don't get your hopes up.
Last year was a serious blip in that. It's really shook us for six about how to mentally prepare for us. Now it's just I don't even know how to cope anymore.
That's how some football fans must feel.
Yeah,
it's just hard to stay optimistic after last year.
I know. Well, Dave, I definitely vibe what you're saying about the Kander and the Igarkovic role, and I definitely think Stevie needs to be in his own role, not the deep one. And proof of that to me was that mazy run and pass he made for Jair's absolute flap of a shot on the weekend. That was a great little run, pretty much from halfway from memory. Mm. Neat little touch. Like they're the kind of it just reminded me of like a ball or two he played against the Coast last year in one of those like 16 goals we scored against them or however many it was. Mm. I know.
Don't over exaggerate. It was 15.
Oh, sorry, mate. I won't do that again. Yeah, we won 15-3 in aggregate from memory, if anyone's listening. So the Stevie, he got dropped a few weeks ago. Would he get hooked off pretty early and he missed a game? Do we think he's back and for good now? Like, is it his spot to lose again, Dave?
I think while ever Kander's out, that will be the case. Gajkovic has had a bit of a funny season. It's like the Jets of last year are just underperforming that 10 or 20%, which is across the board causing us to have the Jets played well, but type season, which to quote Luke sums up our season. Igarkovic is a key player. We know what he's capable of, and the role that he plays linking the midfield with the front, the forwards. If he continues to play like he is, I think that he will be fine. But I prefer to see him in that more advanced role. Is where I'll put it.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Do you think the same, Matt? Do you like Stevie?
Yeah, I think he had a slow start, like a couple of other players, like, you know, for example, George. But when he's on song, he's probably one of the best midfielders in the comp, and I think it's hard to leave him out.
I think Dave and I looked at the stats from last year at one point, and it was like he missed something like 29 minutes of all our playing minutes last year. Like, he was so important to us last year, and so I definitely have faith that he's our centre mid looking into the future. And when Cairn is fit, I don't see anyone really taking either of their place in an ideal world. So
47 minutes.
47, was it?
Mm, 47.
All right. Well, that's such a small number for across the whole season. That's just surreal. Like, he didn't even get suspended or whatever. It's just, man, he was so important to us in a really good season. So, no, I really like the guy. The next person we're going to talk about is Daniel Georgievski. So it was his 100th A-League game on the weekend. Congratulations to the guy.
Fifth yellow card.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so the highlights or lowlights I have of him is the 56th minute. He had a cleared header land to him, and he had a pretty powerful shot just tipped over the bar. He had a yellow card for pretty stupid dissent to the assistant referee, and then he was subbed off in the 73rd minute. We've subbed Georgie off a couple of times early. Like, is he not fit enough, or does Ernie not vibe him as a 90-minute player anymore? What's the go with him, Dave? What are you picking up on it?
I think that he subbed him off to save him from himself. He mentioned that the week before that though he didn't get a yellow, he pulled him off because he could see that he was about to get a yellow. Like we do with Roy, we take that as something that is part of Daniel Georgievski's game. And I've got to say, he's probably, for me, along with Kane Shepherd, been our performer of the year, our player of the season so far. He started off slow, but in the last few weeks, the effort and the delivery that he managed to hit victory players more than ours on the weekend, but he was still getting in the position. He was our only outlet in that game, and Victory were comfortable to give him that time. I don't know if that says anything about the fear or that they have for him, but I've been really impressed with Georgievski so far this season.
He's been really good since we stopped playing Lachlan Jackson as left back.
Yep, I agree.
For sure. Like, and on Jackson, like, are we going to try him at wide back again? Like, Georgievski, he's suspended for this week from memory.
Yep.
So we've got to find a fill-in left back. Are we chucking Hoff back there? Are we putting Jackson back there? Or is my favourite player Ivan Vujica, who am I ever going to see your face again? Because far out, that guy's just gone completely missing. It's like, whose nudes did he lose at times? Like, I can't understand how he... Yeah, am I ever going to
see Vujica again?
You've
got to say that in a Scottish accent, though. Sorry. Get
who have you got left back, Matt? I think that we've got to go with Vujica. It's like the other options, like Cowburn he's a center defensive midfielder. He can play at right back, so he's sort of automatically on the wrong foot. You wouldn't want to switch Hoff over there. Like, you guys are arguing that he's played better up, better further forward. I'd say he's probably our best right back. Vujica plays left back, and that's it. And we've just got absolutely nothing when we've got Lachlan Jackson up there. He's the reason why everyone was... I think he's the reason why everyone else was getting double-teamed when we had the ball, was because you can give him as much space as you want. You know that there's not...
Yeah, he's not a threat.
He's a defender. He's just an out-and-out defender. And, like, as a centre-back, like, he's probably Topper's replacement in a couple of years' time if he continues to develop, but he's not a left-back.
Well, on that topic, like, Bogard's already re-signed, and I think it was James Gardner of the Herald said that Topor is pretty close to re-signing as well. With Moss as well. So we're re-signing the oldies, seemingly, but we've got Bogard and Topor Stanley pretty much nailed as our centre-back pairing. Like, how long until Jackson gets given that role? Is he even going to get a look in? Surely he has to go elsewhere. What are your thoughts on the centre-backs, Dave?
Yeah, I think that we will look to stick with Bogard and Topor Stanley next year, for me, incorrectly. That will see Lachlan Jackson in this, his final season, leave, and I'll probably see him I reckon he'll go back to Brisbane, personally. I think that is what will happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, are you the same, Matt?
Yeah, like, Brisbane Junior, they're struggling for centre-backs at the moment, so fair call. I think out of the two starting centre-backs that we've got, I'd prefer that we kept Topper over Boogs, and I know that they're sort of Jackson and Topper are both left footers, but I'd still rather see them next year, I think, as a starting centre back combination than what we've got. Like, if we don't re-sign Topper, then I think we have to re-sign Jackson.
Yeah, okay. No, we'll see where that heads. So apparently Topper was being re-signed really soon. What was interesting is that wherever I read it, when Gardner or whomever said it, they said, we've got a host of uncontracted players like Jair, Ronnie, Georgievski, Topor Stanley and Moss. And then it said Moss and Topor Stanley are close to re-signing. It was really interesting for me that Georgievski wasn't in the advanced talks of signing as well. Like, do we read anything behind that, Dave?
It's the Melbourne team that comes in next season, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Melbourne.
I wonder. He's certainly a popular player, and he's a player that links. You need those sorts of players that hold the dressing room together, that create the bond and camaraderie in amongst the team. And he appears to be the player that gets on really well with pretty much everyone.
Him and Ronnie have been hanging out too much this year, though, because Ronnie's been whinging.
I mean, how much importance do you put on that with terms of the team balance? I don't know. It would surprise me if we don't go for him, because left backs, again, are a bit of a commodity in the A-League. He's 31, which isn't particularly old for an A-League player. I think that we've got a couple of good seasons left in him. If you'd asked me this question earlier in the season, I probably would have said, yeah, I think that we'll probably let him go. I've changed my mind. I think he's an important player who provides an outlet, given the way that Merrick wants to play. I keep on saying it, with the fullbacks as the outlet. I think we need to keep him.
Yeah, cool. No, I didn't even think of West Melbourne until you just said it, but that makes a whole lot of sense. Like, they're going to be after, obviously, a lot of Australian players because they can only have so many visa players. It's going to open the doors for a lot of good players to get a bit of money and kind of head home to Melbourne. So you could almost say that's going to happen to a point, which is interesting, and we'll have to rely on Vujicic or bring someone else in, I guess. Yeah. And I know we had a good little whip on Redenton before, but probably the whipping boy at the moment from the club is Lewis Italiano. So he made one huge mistake, in my opinion, but some will say two huge mistakes on the weekend. Mm-hmm. So the first Melbourne Victory goal, I'm pretty sure his mind was in Tasmania somewhere because he did not track across his goal in any way. It was like some of the worst positioning I remember ever. So it's like, I think it was Troisi had a ball, maybe played it into Kenny up top, flicked it onto Antonis, and Antonis side-footed it in from outside the box. Like, it was just horrendous positioning, and I can't even fathom how he didn't track across. And then in the 84th minute, Melbourne Victory had a shot, you know, top near corner. It was a decent shot, but he was nowhere near it. What do you think, Matt? Was that game pretty much the killer for Italiano? Is Moss straight back in?
It's really tough to judge a keeper on, you know, a couple of performances, especially like when he's, you know, trying to earn a spot. I think Moss will come back in. It's, you know, what do you say? Like, I mean, how many goes did Beerers get? How many goes did Kennedy get? And we, you know, continue to persist with them. Is he going to be better than Moss next year? I'd say the answer is probably yes, but, you know, can we afford to have those sort of sloppy goals go in that, you know, last year Duncan would have saved and still make the finals?
Yeah.
I think that's probably a big difference between this year and last year, is just the quality of the keeping, whether it's Moss and Italiano this year or, you know, versus Moss and Duncan last year.
I think Moss actually does return. I think Moss comes back into the team this week. And if we are looking to re-sign him, I expect the club to be doing their due diligence and re-signing him as a second keeper, with the look to balance the wages and the cap use to bring in a first-choice keeper from elsewhere. That's the approach that I think that they'd look to take. Glenn Moss is an experienced backup. We saw last year the value in having that. And I think that we will look to repeat that approach next season, looking ahead, not moving forward, ahead.
Looking forward. Yeah, nice. Like it. I think the only player we haven't really covered to a point is Angus Thurgate. I haven't seen enough of the guy. Does anyone really have any thoughts on him?
The Port Macquarie Pele, yeah. I reckon he has a bright future. I expect him, for him to look to progress to the next level, I want to be seeing Angus start a game, or start a few games, actually, this season. He's signed for a couple of seasons, so the club the club have got faith in what he can provide, but he is inconsistent so far, I'd say, in the impact that he's coming in off the bench. Sometimes he hasn't got a great opportunity to, but I want to see him pushing a claim for a start before the end of the year.
So where are you starting him, like right mid?
Probably left mid, where Jay Ayres is. But yep.
Have you seen enough of him? Oh, no, you're right.
Go. I was going to say, I don't know what his preferred position is, though. That's the only thing. I mean, FIFA, all-knowing FIFA, has him down as a centre mid. Is that where he plays? I don't know where he plays for the youth team, having not seen them. But
I think he played as a 10 for the Australian team.
Okay.
What, the under-19s or whatever?
He could be a backup to Dimmy, or another option with Dimmy.
Well, he's with us. He's local-ish, Port Macpele, so we'll just give him some time and use him when we can. Mm. And the only person that I wanted to talk about, which we haven't yet, is our coach, Ernie Merrick. On the weekend, he only used two subs. Should we have seen someone else come on? Do we think he's getting things necessarily right or wrong? Dave, you have some pretty alarming stats that compare him to previous coaches that we've despised for the numbers this season. Have we lost or are we losing faith in Ernie yet? Or does he still have the grace period from last year? What do you think, Dave?
I think he's still got the grace period. I think if the team were getting tonked or playing unattractive football, then the pressure would certainly be ramping up. We are competitive in games. We just can't convert our chances. We're conceding goals at the same rate we were last year, so that hasn't improved, nor has it really got worse. We're just not scoring as many as we were last year, which for us is our biggest issue. Merritt gets this season, and he probably gets next season as well, because victory fans will tell you that he'll get he has a good season, then he has a bad season. So next season's got to be good, right?
Let's see. What do you think, Matt? What are your thoughts on Merritt?
I think him and Laurie work well together, which is a good start. I don't think we've got the money to necessarily go out and pay out contracts and whatnot. Is Ernie off contract at the end of the season, or is he still got another one to go?
I think he might actually be off.
Okay. I would have thought he'd have a couple more.
I thought he had one to go, but I'm certainly not going to disagree with the master of stats. I think that what we've really lacked over the last couple of years is maybe a bit of consistency, and we've got a lot of players coming off contract at the end of the year, so we're going to see some turnover, and there could be 3, 4, 5 different players, names to the squad that were starting, not be playing with us next year.
Ernie Merrick has next season too. On the 17th of the 4th last year, he committed to an additional season, which took him through to 19-20.
I stand corrected. I was right and Dave was wrong.
Hey. Always challenge the stats, mate.
You've got to keep me honest.
Bodes was the vice president of stats. I think I'm equal vice president of stats now.
Junior vice president.
Yeah, junior vice president. No. Not quite yet. Jim.
In intern position.
Yeah. No. One thing I will say, in the off season last year / the back end of the year before, I don't think anyone's given a lot of credit to a lot of the good signings we had from last year, before the start of last year. They were Mark Jones signings. We signed Roy O'Donovan, Daniel Georgevsky, one or two other people, all under Mark Jones, or he'd teed it up.
Were they Mark Jones, or were they Laurie McInnes?
Laurie.
Well, I think it was both. It was definitely when Jones was there as well. Okay, yeah. Well, what I'm trying to get at is Merrick had a large amount of his squad already set up, minus one or two players, when he came in. This off-season, Ernie's come in and he's put his flavour in, and it's guys like Redenton and Jair and whatnot. Is Ernie not recruiting properly? I'm just thinking on the spot, but is there anything behind this, Matt, do you think?
You can't blame Ernie for Jair, because that was a complete curveball with Roy getting 10 weeks. They said multiple times that they were looking for another wide player to replace Naboot, and with Roy getting 10 weeks, they had to sort of change their focus to someone who could maybe play a bit more central. And, unfortunately, I think it's meant that they've had to make do with someone that could maybe fill both positions instead of getting someone that was, just an out-and-out winger that was going to replace Naboot. And that's probably why we brought in Austin as well, as another stopgap for a wide player. So I can't blame him for the Jair, recruitment, because I'm pretty sure that Griffiths had a lot to do with that. But Redenton, on the other hand, yeah, hang him.
What do you think, Dave?
Not too sure, mate. Don't think I can add anything more.
Yep. No, that's cool. That's pretty much all I have in terms of the men's. I think we just covered just about everyone, maybe not the kit man or something like that, but I think we covered just about bloody everyone else in the club.
Ando can stay.
Yeah, Ando can stay. So, yeah, we've covered him too. Well done. So I wanted to give a shout-out to the Jets W League team. So I didn't watch it, but my understanding is they had a pretty unexpected, I think it was a 3-1 win against Samkur's Perth. And I remember when we did the preview last week, we were all picturing a Bodes special against us, because we've just had injury upon injury. So did anyone go to that game? Did you watch it or anything, Dave?
No, I unfortunately had a prior commitment that didn't allow me to get there. But being 1-0 down at half time and then being able to come back with a 3-1 win is terrific. I mean, this win shouldn't be underestimated. Disappointing. I mean, it's been a disappointing season for the Jets. They're still 5 points outside of the top four, so they need to win every game to be to even have a chance of making it. But in front of a really decent crowd at number two sports ground as well of 1,800 people, that's pretty good. I mean, goals to Wright, Andrews, and then a late one to seal it from Courtney Vine. It was really good performance for the Jets and wonderful to see them get a victory.
Matt, I don't watch the Women's League a whole lot, to be honest. What I did pick up on last week was Emily Van Egmond was ruled out for the rest of the season with an injury. I didn't expect this response from the team at all. Did you see this coming?
Not at all. Like, and I'm with you. Like, I'll try and stay up to date as far as what's happening, and I'll sit down and watch maybe the Thursday night game and, you know, watch all the highlights and whatnot. But no, I think after Van Egmond got ruled out and after losing Taylor Smith and after it being, you know, pretty disappointing sort of season all round, like I thought we were going to go a lot better at the start of the season than what we have. It was more than a little bit surprising.
I mean, it's probably got a factor there with Van Egmond being out that other players have had to step up. They can't rely on Emily Van Egmond to be that central figure, the player that everything goes through, that they expect to pull them out because of her status within the game. I mean, we've got players like Tessa Tamplin, who's been highlighted by the W League website as a player for the future. You've got Libby Copus-Brown, who won the last month goal of the month for her cracker against, I think it was Sydney FC. And then you've got the experience and ability of Aaron Wright stepping up in the absence of Katie Stengel and Van Egmond in that front, well, as a midfielder as well, the pace and the drive that she provides to that midfield. I think that we're looking to possibly shape the team in a slightly different way with those players being out of the lineup and being unavailable because we've been smashed with injuries this year.
Yeah, right. Well, they've got, what, 3 games left? They need absolute minimum 2 to get in finals plus results to go their way. So anything could happen, particularly with that bounce back. So let's all hope the best for the girls. And if they're playing at a ground local to you, try and get out and watch them and support them. So now I've got a little quiz for us. I know this is going to be pretty exciting for Dave having a quiz. I've actually prepared for this podcast. It's pretty cool. So I've got a quiz. I am going to say a statement or a question, and I want you to tell me the first answer that pops up into your head, and I'll give you a hint. The answers are the same answer for every question. So I'm going to make this really straightforward. Matt, when I say worst start to an A-League season ever, what comes to mind to you?
The Ospreys.
The what?
The new owners of the Central Coast Mariners, the East Coast Osprey.
Yep. So Central Coast Mariners is the correct answer to that trivia question. So that's 5 points to you. And Dave, I have a question to you. And note that I said that the answers are the same as each other. If I say the statement 2-0 and you fucked it up, what do you think about?
I certainly think it's the Central Coast Mariners. But I've got a question for you. I've got a question for you. Who's currently 1-0 up in the game between the Mariners and Melbourne City in the 78th minute?
Is it the same answer as the other two?
Well, this is your quiz, mate.
Okay, all right, we'll go with Central Coast Mariners.
Oh, just as I said that, Melbourne City have scored!
Yeah, good call, mate.
Good on you.
But it was an ex-Central Coast player as well.
It's the curse. That's the best piece of audio we've ever recorded.
I'm pretty sure that they said they were going to sign 4 new players.
Sucker coasties.
The ironing is delicious.
Oh, this is the best thing that's ever happened to this podcast. I'd like to thank Ferns. I'd like to thank Mitch for, and I'd like to thank the guy that called me, the guy that fixed my car that called me in the middle that forced this podcast to go longer.
It's just pure perfection. Well, I think all three of us got 5 points there for right answers, and 5 points is more points than CCM are currently on track to get this season. Thank you very much. Oh man, that's a
the savagery.
That's good. I like that. Well, on that note, I we have nothing else to talk about.
I think we need to wrap it up right here. We need to wrap it up right here.
So, thank you.
Oh, they're going to score again. That would have made it even better.
All right, we're going to head out on this note. So, Matt, thank you very much for joining me on my. I think this is my second time hosting. You were brilliant. Thank you, pal.
Thanks, mate. You've made it easy.
And Dave, memory will go down in history. That was a terrific bit of podcast cameo. That was awesome.
Jets 2-1 to win this weekend. What?
There's Hull going off. The player with the current most consecutive losses in a row.
Oh, he might get a draw. You never know. All right. Very good. Thanks, Mitch.
Catch us on the usual socials. Catch us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, email. And we'll wrap this up by Sammy Vamos El Jerkos.
Go the curse of the jet stream.
I was waiting for you. Go the Jets.
Oh, this is brilliant.